So far on this retreat, I've mentioned the four Brahmavihara qualities a couple of times, these very skillful states of heart and mind that we can cultivate directly through meditation. And this term Brahmavihara means something like divine abidings or sublime states or heavenly realms or the four boundless qualities. Because when we cultivate these qualities of kindness or metta, compassion or karuna, appreciative joy or mudita, and equanimity or upekkha to their fullest state, they become completely unconditional, completely without limits or boundless. And we already did a little bit of practice with the first of these, metta or kindness, the other day. This afternoon I'd like to begin to explore or just touch into the quality of compassion or karuna. So as I mentioned the other night, metta is the foundation for all of the Brahmavihara practices to flourish from. And then from this base of goodwill, when that goodwill turns towards what's difficult in our own or others' lives, without flinching or getting lost in grief, it flowers as compassion. And as many of you know, each of these four qualities has what are known as a near enemy and a far enemy. So the near enemy is something that looks similar, that masquerades perhaps as the quality we're aiming for. And the far enemy is its total opposite. So the far enemy of compassion is cruelty. Rather than wishing to relieve pain, we desire to inflict it. Perhaps we even enjoy somebody's pain and suffering, which, because of the law of karma, will eventually end up hurting us too. So the far enemy is usually pretty easy to see because it is so opposite and also because it's painful. The near enemy is sometimes not as obvious, and in the case of compassion, the near enemies are pity and grief. So pity at first glance might seem like it's in the terrain of compassion. But if we investigate it more closely, we might see that energetically, and again this is where the body can be a resource, we can feel a kind of shutting down or distancing, a sense of separation, perhaps even superiority, looking down on poor you suffering over there. So if we do recognize this kind of disconnection, we might need to re-establish the foundation of metta or kindness, warmth, a little more strongly before we try to turn again towards compassion. Or if we're working with different categories of people, we might try to find a different person who's less likely to evoke pity rather than true compassion. And this is not cheating. With all of these Brahmavihara practices, we're encouraged to start where the quality comes most easily and then gradually expand our capacity to extend it to a range of different beings. So if at any point we find that we've hit some kind of block or it's not working, we can step back and find a slightly easier person to work with. So there's a second challenge when practicing compassion, particularly because we're invited to connect, to contact pain and suffering very directly, it can be easy to fall into sorrow or grief. So as I said the other night, compassion is sometimes misunderstood as empathy, as being just about feeling the other's pain as if it were our own. But compassion in this context is not just empathy. True compassion is protected by wisdom, and it's this discernment that helps us to stay balanced and centered like Kuan Yin, so that we don't fall into empathy burnout or compassion fatigue. And if we do find that we're starting to feel overwhelmed by grief, then we might need to really emphasize the relief from suffering that marks true compassion. And even if it's only an imaginative exercise, we might consciously visualize the person regaining full health or getting out of debt or finding a better job or being involved in a healthier relationship or whatever the situation might be. Or we can try to find something in the person's life that's going well. Because often, even in the midst of challenges, we can find some kind of silver lining. And this orientation to what we might appreciate about the person's situation can help lighten the load of distress on their behalf and bring us back into balance. So another challenge of working with compassion practice, especially self-compassion, as I mentioned the other night, it can bring us into contact with some very deep conditioning, painful self-views, afflictive emotions, all kinds of difficult mind states. So if we do find ourselves coming into contact with some kind of deeply held belief or strong emotional pattern, the key is, again, to work with this very gradually. And I want to highlight this because it's very common in relation to strongly afflictive mind states for people to flip between two extremes. One is just to avoid, ignore, deny, repress, and not allow our awareness to go anywhere near that afflictive emotion. And the other is to push ourselves to drill down into our most excruciating trauma and stay there with the misunderstanding that anything less than that is somehow cheating. But this tendency to try to push through or drill down into is just another symptom of that same painful pattern. So before we go into some actual compassion practice, I'd like to take just a couple more minutes to offer a few suggestions for working with those more deeper-rooted emotional afflictive states. And keeping in mind, these are intended to be for those states that feel more sticky, more compacted, more deeply rooted, states that are in the terrain of what we call sankharas or formations, those deeply grooved cow paths in the brain that we keep finding ourselves wandering through over and over again. So the first thing to keep in mind when we're working with difficult emotions is that we're always trying to stay in balance in relation to them. So remembering the Buddha put so much emphasis on the middle way, again, we're trying to find that balance between not just ignoring on one hand, but not falling into and getting overwhelmed on the other. And so this is where compassion is a practice of deep listening, listening to ourselves, paying attention to the context we're in, being aware of our current capacity to navigate these challenges. And if we do sense that we have some capacity, if the timing feels right, we might choose to take a session of meditation just to explore, to investigate a bit more directly what might be underneath these afflictive thoughts and mental patterns. So beginning to try to drop down below the content, the thought processes into the emotion, one of the first things we usually encounter in terms of painful emotion is a bodily response to contract, to tighten, to brace against, to tense up in some way, which makes the whole experience even more unpleasant. But we can let that initial contracting, resisting energy in the body actually be a sort of a mindfulness bell to help us right there to know, okay, something unpleasant right now. Can I make space for it? Can I befriend it? So as many of you know, I like to use a mantra from the Zen teacher Charlotte Joko Beck. And this mantra is ABC, which stands for A, bigger container. So when we feel that first clamping down, tightening, bracing right there, can we remember A, B, C? Make A bigger container for that difficulty. And we all have our own way of doing that, but we might notice in that tightening or tensing, perhaps the shoulders hunch or the jaw clenches or the fists curl slightly. So with this reminder of A, B, C, we might consciously sit up a little taller and straighter. We might open the shoulders to make more space in the chest. We might take a deeper breath, again, in the service of expanding and making more room in the body for this difficulty. So the analogy is it's a bit like putting a wild horse in a small corral. If that energy is held in a small space, it's very tight and intense. But if we let the wild horse out into a bigger field, it's the same energy, but it has much less negative impact. So we make space in the body. And if that doesn't feel enough, we might open the eyes and take in the space of the room. So we're putting our difficulties into a bigger perspective. So just for a moment, we open the eyes, acknowledge we are in a bigger space. And if that isn't enough, we might look out of the window. If we can see the sky, so much the better, because the sky is a very powerful reminder of vastness. So remembering A, B, C, whenever we feel that first contraction of resistance or bracing against a painful emotion. And sometimes that making space does help the intensity to lessen, and we can stay with it until it just naturally passes away of its own accord. At other times, though, it might be that our mindfulness, our awareness isn't strong enough and we're starting to get lost in the emotion. And this is where I suggest the strategy of touch, the strategy of touch and go. And this means touching into the emotion, feeling it in the body, noticing it in the heart, noticing it in the mind for just a few moments. For as long as you can stay steady with it, and then going to either physically going or taking the attention, moving the attention somewhere else. So go might involve turning the attention to pleasant sensations in the body as a way of soothing any distress that's starting to build. If that doesn't work, then at the end of the session, we might need to go and do something different, like go for a longer walk, or go sit in the sun, or go and watch the fish in the pool, or go for a run, or have a cup of tea, or just anything that helps the heart mind to soothe and to come back to balance. If for some reason we're not in circumstances where we can do that, we can use our imagination and go to the memory of a time when we were at ease, when we felt calm, strong, whole, healthy, and so on. So all of us hopefully have some sort of iconic memories of a time when we really were like that. Perhaps it's walking with a partner along the beach or climbing a mountain or kayaking down a river with family or whatever it might be, but some time when we really felt whole, safe, and at ease. We might go to that memory as a way, again, of coming back to balance. So all these are strategies for, as I say, in the medical profession, titrating the dose of the difficult emotion, so that we get just enough exposure that it strengthens our immune system, but not so much that it gives us adverse reactions. And sometimes the doses that we give might need to be just homeopathic doses, very small, so that we're gradually expanding our capacity to integrate and metabolize these challenges. So we might, if we're practicing at home, or even here, if you have a timekeeping device, you might literally set a time for how long you allow yourself to be with whatever the difficulty is. And you might start with 30 seconds if it's something that's very challenging. And you make a kind of a determination, I will be with this difficult experience for just 30 seconds. And then at the end of the 30 seconds, you might literally or metaphorically bow to it. And then take that strategic withdrawal. Take your attention somewhere else that's nourishing and soothing and so on. So it's not cheating to move away from difficulty as people sometimes think. Again, there's that very common misperception that spiritual practice is supposed to be hard and difficult and painful. And if it's not, I'm not doing it right. I'm not practicing hard enough. I'm not going deep enough. So again, that's part of that same syndrome that we want to really watch out for and train ourselves into this new orientation of very gradually metabolizing and integrating whatever the difficulty is. And so self-compassion can be a very powerful ally here. And then lastly, when the painful emotion has gone, remembering Gill's acronym BELLA, the A is appreciate. So just noticing how it feels after some kind of afflictive emotion has moved through. Really let in the feelings of ease and peace, steadiness, balance, openness, and so on. So I'd like to offer some practice doing that fairly soon. We'll be using the traditional reciting phrases method, similar to what we did on Tuesday. And this time, rather than the benefactor, you're invited to work with someone you're close to, someone that you care about, but who's currently experiencing some kind of difficulty in their life, some kind of pain, challenge, distress. So again, because this is a training, I invite you not to choose somebody who's having a really intensely hard time. It's not that they're not worthy of your compassion, but we want to gradually strengthen this muscle. So on a scale of 0 to 10, try to find somebody whose difficulty is a 5 or less. And the phrases I'll be using are similar to the ones I offered in the talk. I'm aware of this pain. I care about this pain. May this pain release. May I know peace. And pain here means any kind of pain, not just physical pain, but psychological, emotional, any kind of distress. So I also want to emphasize that in this process of listening to yourself, listening to your own practice, if this doesn't feel like a useful thing to be doing at this point in your practice, if other stuff is going on, if it doesn't feel appropriate in any way, feel free to, in a moment, just to leave and follow your own practice. So really listen to your own being and see if this feels appropriate for you right now.